Morning all.
Morning.
Oh, for the last time. Welcome to this fifth and final theme talk for the week. Yes, that means it's Friday, which for people of a certain age means it's Crackerjack Day. Or for those of you who've made the painful transition from Terry Wogan, it's Candyman Day. Right? How many people listen to it? Yeah? I heard it this morning. Yeah, cool. More importantly, it's Winnie's Day. Fair face, full of grace, full of woe. Far to go, and you took us a long way, Jim, thank you. Friday's child is... And I've told you I asked each of them to give me just a hint, an insight into their deeper selves, their truer selves. Winnie acknowledges that she's impulsive, impatient and irresistible. And then this little paragraph, I love this, which I will leave you with and ask her, and with Lindy's help, to take over the theme talk for the morning. As someone always fascinated with the stories of gods and goddesses of ancient Greece, I probably describe myself as the daughter of an angelic mother and a demon father. So not all good, not all bad. Hence, as a 13-year-old, I deliberated between becoming a government assassinator or following the God delusion. And I'll leave you all to decide which one I chose.
Thank you, Michael, for the introduction. I'm going to start with lighting our chalice, and the words I'm using this morning is from Eric Walker Wikström. Sorry, it's Wikström. If anyone can't hear me, please put your hand like that and I'll nod. I need to project my voice a bit more. We light this chalice for all who are here and all who are not, for all who have ever walked through our doors, for those who may yet find this spiritual home, and for those we cannot even yet imagine, for each of us, and for us all, may this flame burn bright and warm. So good morning.
Morning.
It's the last day again and I've got to follow all the brilliant thoughts that came before. And all the people who stood in this place and had similar words, because it is similar words each year. I feel honoured and I feel really privileged to be asked to be the speaker this morning and to be with you all week long sharing your journey. Thank you. But first, just for a moment, let us have a moment of silence to centre ourselves, to remind ourselves that we are here, in this centre, together. Now that we're here together, let us sing together our hymn. Come and find the quiet centre. Hymn number 21, Come and find the quiet centre. Enjoy our all-age story.
Can I be the consistency actors and actresses? Please take that.
Right, well, some of you may remember a few years ago, we had some constant friends here for our morning talks, and they were called Frog and Toad. And anyway, they've been moaning at me for several years now, saying it's time they came back to summer school. And so here they are. But they've also brought another friend with them, who is called Turtle. And I believe that in Turtle's previous life, she was a gymnast.
And those of you who know Frog and Toad know that they are very good friends. Frog is one of those wonderful creatures whose glass is always half full. But Toad's glass is always half empty. And of course, you can imagine what happened to Toad one day when he woke up, because they did live in separate houses, but they spent a lot of daytime together. And Toad woke up and he was just feeling a little bit miserable. And he thought, I know, I'll go and see Frog. He can cheer me up. So off Toad went to Frog's house. And when he got there, he saw a notice on the door, and it said, would you like to read it, Danny?
Dear Toad, I'm not at home. I went out. I want to be alone. Love from Frog.
And I'd just like to tell you, actually, Turtle wrote that. Because Frog's not very good at writing.
Alone? Said Toad. Frog has me for a friend. Why does he want to be alone? And where is he? So Toad looked out of the window and he looked in the garden, but he didn't see Frog. He went to the woods. Frog wasn't there either. And he went down to the river. Just about there, all right. Limited rehearsal time, all right. And he looked around, and there was Frog sitting on an island all by himself. Poor Frog, said Toad. He must be feeling very sad. I know what I'm going to do.
I'm going to go and cheer him up. So he toddled back home and he made a lovely picnic of sandwiches, iced tea, and he put it all in a beautiful basket, and off he went to stand at the edge of the river. So off he toddled. About there, be fine, thank you. Frog, he shouted, it's me, it's your best friend, Toad. Okay, that's fine. But Frog was much too far away to hear, and so Toad took off his jacket and he waved it like a flag, but Frog was too far away to see. Toad shouted and waved, but it was no use. Frog sat on the island and he did not see. You can see he's just totally nonchalant. He's just not keening him with anything at all. And then a turtle swam by. And Toad climbed on the turtle's back. Toad climbed on the turtle's back and he said, carry me to the island because Frog is there and he wants to be alone. And Turtle, being very wise, said, well, if he wants to be alone, perhaps you should let him be alone. Can you just stop a minute? Well, maybe you're right, said Toad. Maybe Frog doesn't want to see me. Maybe Frog doesn't want to be my friend anymore. I've probably done lots of silly things to annoy him. Yes, maybe, said Turtle. But Turtle continued with Frog on his back to swim to the island. Frog, cried out Toad as they got a bit nearer, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry for all the dumb, silly things that I do, and please, for all the silly things I say, please will you be my friend again? And then at that moment, because he was so upset and excited, he fell off Turtle's back, splash into the river. Only the best china for this picnic. Just look as if you're swimming and sinking. But Frog was very anxious to see his friend in the river, so he came and pulled him out. And he pulled him onto the island. Thank you, Turtle. Right. But you know, the sandwiches were wet and the tea had all got lost in the river. Our lunch is spoiled, said Toad. I made it for you, Frog. I made it to make you happy. But Toad, said Frog. Right. Toad, look happy. I mean, Frog. Happy. I'm very happy. This morning I woke up and I felt so happy because the sun was shining, but I just wanted to be alone. And I felt good because I have you for a friend. But now I've been alone. What did it say next? And Toad said, well, I guess that's a very good reason for wanting to be alone. And now, said Frog, I would be very glad to have you as a friend so we can share the rest of the day together. And so they both spent the rest of the day together on the island without any tea, eating soggy sandwiches. And they were very happy to be together. Thank you very much.
I'm about to leave before I embarrass my daughter of letting her know that I'm going to sing it. Thank you, Nick. So, this talk comes with a warning, and this is not a joke. There will be singing led by me, and I'm not so tuneful. You may leave here with damaged eardrums. There may be snow on your way home. In fact, you may be snowed in. But that's okay, we'll spend more time together. You are about to enter living on the edge zone of Winnie's life. And it may get a little bit spiritual. The Cambridge Idioms Dictionary, the second edition, defines living on the edge as a type of life in which you are often involved in exciting or dangerous activities. Now, I'd like to add, living at the edge can also involve something ordinary or mundane. Imagine, although for some of us it may be true, imagine you've been going along your life as normal, but lately it's getting busier and busier. Nothing especially exciting or dangerous. You have work, college maybe, children, grandchildren and friends. You have council meetings, committee meetings, PTA meetings. Then there are the school clubs, hobby clubs, societies, socials, discussion groups, and associations. You are passionate about saving the planet, so you belong to Greenpeace, maybe also animal rights and human rights groups. On top of that, you make signs for campaigns for the release of unlawfully detained prisoners. You write letters for Amnesty International. You do Macmillan coffee mornings at your church. You belong to the Women's League, the Women's Group, the Craft Group and the Choir. And you go to church on Sunday, yes? And each morning, like Sue, you do a 3-mile jog. And you wonder, where in your life do you have time to follow a spiritual practice? The very reason, maybe, you became a Unitarian or you remained a Unitarian. Unitarian Universalist Reverend Susan Mancusill, I've got that right, Nancy, says, we all, in our innermost core, yearn to be connected with the mystery some call God or nature or spirit. So when in your free time, and I've learnt that British Unitarians, I'm not certain what goes on in America, but British Unitarians don't have any free time. So when do you have the time? And now I'm going to quote Donald Rothberg. When do you have the time to cultivate love, compassion, courage, and wisdom in a deep and lasting way, working through one's self-centeredness, one's hatred, fear, and confusion? Now, Donald used those words to define spiritual practice. And Donald Rothberg is an American Buddhist teacher and writer. So I'm asking you again, within your busy life, is your spirituality the centre of your life and not on the edge? Today you're on a mini vacation here at Hooklaw. And maybe later you'll find yourself running up the side of the cliff, full steam ahead with Nancy and Julie, walking to the edge. And you reach that outcrop ledge and you stop to take a breather. And you look out at the beautiful landscape, the beautiful blue sky, the leafy green trees, the haze of the sun. And you're just looking there, feeling relaxed, feeling blessed. When a truck comes out of nowhere and hits you over the edge, you're falling downwards, downwind, no rope, no parachute, no net to catch you. And halfway down, you begin to wonder, what the hell happened to get you here? What's the meaning of all the schedules and all the business and all the activities, if this is it? And you remember, vaguely, some kind of spiritual practice you used to do. Some kind of praying, some kind of meditating, some kind of something other that you used to do. And as you're falling, you reach out and you catch a branch hanging by the fingertips, wondering if it's too late to start a spiritual practice now. Now I'm going to leave you hanging there for a while so I can share some other things. As a teenager, I lived on the edge of life. And by this, I didn't mean I engaged in life, but I hid from it. I was an introvert, which was strange for me because as a child, I was very noisy and into everything and could not be controlled. And I'm not sure why the change, but I remember what precipitated the inwards looking aloneness. But I was never lonely, just aloneness. It was a criticism from a teacher and the laughter of the class at my shaky reading skills at secondary school in that first year. Now, by the second year, I was reading better and faster than anyone in my class.
Yes.
But by the second year, I was withdrawing from all school activities and withdrawing from hanging out with my friends. I became a non-participant of life. I lived on the edge of life. Beginning around age 21, I was living at the edge, but this time involved in exciting things. I was meeting famous musicians, exploring new worlds in terms of culturally, socially, and professionally. Living at the edge was an adventure. It was that feeling that you get at an amusement ride where it's slightly scary but freeing and wonderful and powerful. It's not so adventurous now, I'm hit 41. But life is still on the edge. And like in the story of the frog and toad, I am sometimes dying for a long time. Now for 15 years, I've been wishing to go out into the woods, spend 6 months in a cabin, have to go outside the door and pump that water, but have electricity inside, by the way. And I keep on saying, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be spiritual, and I'm going to write a book, and it's going to be all so wonderful. And I'm going to come out a calm, zen-like Liz Bertels. With Anna Jarvis. I know this is a fantasy and it isn't going to happen soon. The reality is, I don't have time to be spiritual and leave this worldly busyness that I exist in. I don't have time for that desert oasis or the island that frog could escape to. And I probably wouldn't like living in the woods for 6 months anyway. Therefore, I've had to develop some kind of spirituality at the edge of my busy life. And standing at the edge, or feeling pushed over the edge, as I sometimes feel, I've had to incorporate spiritual practices, spiritual aspects of connection to something outside of myself. That's something that is luminous into this business of my life. So my talk this morning is going to emphasise 3 points. Number one, taking the time. Be an hour or 1 minute. Consciously taking the time to connect yourself with your spirituality. Number two, defining your practice. Now, sometimes we do things without even thinking about it. And sometimes we do things spiritual without even realising it. But if we define an aspect of our life as a spiritual practice, when we do it consciously, in the time we have set aside, so taking that time, there is a greater connection to the universe and hopefully a deeper enjoyment of life. There's something about defining the practice that brings a fulfillment to your daily activities that de-stresses you. De-stresses the busyness, the chaos, the clutter of life. And thirdly, we're going to engage in the practice once you've defined it. So take the time, define the practice, and engage in it. So we'll start with taking the time. In between the miracles, the healings, the arguments, the feedings, the storytelling, the parables, the Gospels all report that Jesus of Nazareth found space to pray. He went out into the desert for 40 days to find space. He walked out to the boat on water to find space and time. In fact, he wasn't really going to the boat, but he had to detour there. He left the disciples at the bottom of the mountain to find space and time to pray. He left them there at the busiest, most hectic, most harassed time of his life, a few days before he died, or was it a few hours? Debatable. He found time to be spiritual because, like us, he yearned to connect with the mystery. Finding space in your life begins with finding space in your day. I'll repeat it. Finding space in your life begins with finding space in your day. We fill our lives with activities. I know for myself, I'm often feeling like 24 hours is not enough. I find frequently that taking 30 minutes to meditate or do a lectio divina or sit and pray is impossible. It's too long, I'm too busy. It's no excuse, but life keeps going on. I've got to get things done. So how do I take the time to find meaning in my life to engage in the spiritual? I'm a list person. I'm sure Sue understands this. When I make a list, I get through most of it, not all of it. And I actually do a spiritual practice if I write it down. When I don't write it down, it's if I get to do it. There is 24 hours in a day. You can't make the day longer. You can't make it shorter. But if you stop and take 5, 10, 50 minutes, whatever's good for you, you stop to be spiritual. It's always possible. But it's up to you to take, as that 24 hours, the time. So I'm going to begin, so I can find where I put it, by giving you a sheet. So if I have a few people passing this out, that'd be great, thank you. This is an individual, alone activity. Okay, so no talking. On this sheet, you see 4 boxes. You've got daily, weekly, monthly, yearly. And I'm going to ask you to fill in what you do spiritual in each box. So what you do daily, what you do weekly, what you do monthly, what you do yearly. So for instance, if you do yoga 3 times a week, you'd put it in the weekly box, but just put times 3 behind it. If you do summer school, it'd be in the yearly blocks. And maybe you have more than one summer school you go to. So it could be yearly times 2, twice a year. Okay? And whatever you do every single day, put it in your daily box. Now, if you haven't got any pens, I'll borrow some from you. Here. Uh-huh. Stick one here. Don't take my pens from me. Forget about that. Come around with us. That sounds. Am I going to give you a few minutes to do this, or you can continue it later on if you want? Does anybody else have anything to write with? Give you 1 more minute. Now, this is a rule of life, and I'm going to ask you to continue doing this later on if you wish. It's something that we did at college, but there's lots of books out there that talk about rules of life. So, it's not something I designed. I wish I did. Did you write a lot down? Yeah? Do you find it amazing how much we notice when we get religious? How much activities we do that are spiritual. Can you think back to before you were probably as spiritual or religious than you are today? And the things that you did that you'd consider a spiritual practice. Was it as much as now? Or was it more? I'll give you another personal story. In 1999, the year before my daughter was born, I wasn't praying, meditating, or even attending church much. But while walking the towers of the prison walls where I was a correction officer, with the rifle on my shoulder and the shotgun in my hand. I remember stopping. Every time in the tower, I remember stopping and saying, "Please, God, don't let me shoot anyone today." I remember feeling anxious in the prison corridors at changeover time when 250 inmates were returning to their cells after finishing their work duty, and there was only 5 of us officers standing in the corridor. And I remember standing still, because I had to, and projecting an invisible kind of barrier. I tried to put all my anxiety and my stress and my fears into this barrier. I tried to look calm and peaceful, but ready to go. And I remember when I left work on the day, I'd hurried to get into my car, because if we didn't hurry and get off the government parking lot, if they needed someone because they were short staff or there's an emergency, I was made to go back in that building and work another shift. So I'd run to my car and I'd drive off that plot and I'd park around the corner. And I'll sit still and just take some deep breaths to get rid of all that tension and all that stress, and to remember who I was, to get rid of that take no prisoners attitude that I had to do all day long. At the time, I didn't view it as a spiritual practice, but it was. I did it daily, intentionally, with depth of feeling. It wasn't addressed to God, it was addressed to me inside. A spiritual reconnection with myself. It was on the edge of living, but it centered my being. Take the time to be spiritual. Review your rule of life often. See what needs changing. See what you can really do realistically in a day, a week, a month, a year. Defining your practice. Now, I'm not making any assumptions here. So raise your hands if you have a spiritual practice. Now keep your hands raised if you do it daily. Okay. What about if you do it weekly? A bit more of you, I think, do it weekly. What about monthly? Okay, very few. Another question for you. Raise your hands if your spiritual practice is done in a group. Okay, a few of you.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Good. Each person here will have a different practice. Sometimes it will be the same thing every day, at the same time every day, at the same place every day, with the same people every day. Sometimes it will differ in the practice and the time. Sometimes you may struggle to even do a practice, much less define it. For me, the last couple of years have been a struggle to define and participate in a spiritual practice because I've been too busy. It has felt like I was doing nothing, which is why the rule of life was really important for me to do. It felt like there was no time left to fit in anything. And I'm sure you can all identify with that. I had to force myself to sit down and define a practice, that rule of life. And when I did that, it went from this, a cup half empty, to this, my cup half full. So a bit more in this one. But a lot of it's exactly the same. Look at that later if you wish. But everyone's is always different. Now our practices are a result of our beliefs. Sometimes our beliefs may be a result of our practices. Sometimes they feel interchangeable. For instance, did my belief in no cruelty to animal as a teen predate my no testing of makeup on animal policy? Or did the policy influence my belief of animal welfare? Interchangeable. The ethics and beliefs that guide us dictates our practices. For many, Jains and Buddhists, for example, a belief in, I've got to get this right, abstaining from taking a life may result in the practice of veganism. It may result in being against capital punishment and for speaking out about it. For many, do no harm or abstaining from unwise speech results in the practice of only speaking kind, loving words, no gossiping, even at times no speaking at all. If you can't say something nice, don't say it at all. We define our practices from our beliefs. So Donald Rothberg gives 5 basic ethical precepts from Pali, the language of the Buddha. And I'm only going to give you one for this example because the time is short. He talks about, for instance, the belief to abstain from taking of life. We could translate that to the 10 Commandments, or one of them, do not kill. But it's much more than that. And I don't know about you, but for years I've been congratulating myself that I haven't taken a life. I could tick it off as a spiritual practice, do not kill. However, looking more deeply at this Buddhist practice of abstaining from taking a life, I had to admit that it's quite challenging to practice. I have taken the life of many spiders, daddy long legs, beetles, flies, wasps, and even eaten a worm as a child, not as an adult. I passively contribute to the taking of life by eating meat. Sometimes in anger and horror at the deaths of the depravity of human beings, I agree the need for capital punishment. And again, in anger, maybe I say words that does harm to another person, that kills a part of their spirit, about their passion, and kills a bit of their hope. But it isn't always about what I do. Sometimes it's about what I don't do. I don't go out protesting the sales of arms, the stockpiling of nuclear weapons, the raping of the minerals from our planet Mother Earth, or the use of insecticides. My ability to abstain from taking life is pretty poor as a wholehearted spiritual practice. So we need to define exactly what our practice is from our beliefs. Rothenberg explains we live in an infrastructure that contributes to the unconscious harming of life through institutions, through policies, through cultures, education and ideologies. Without awareness of our reactive patterns, we commonly recycle the pain, the suffering and the harm that we do. In other words, we need a conscious commitment to abstain from violence or harm. We need to be consciously involved in defining our practices from our beliefs. So teachers like the Buddha, Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and so on. And many we heard about this week, like Mr. Milk, I can't remember his first name, Arthur Milk, and some of our heroes from the Challenge Programme that volunteer their time as mentors. Help us to transform the conditioning of our society in an individual and collective manner. They help us to define our spiritual practice. Being non-combatant on a march in a society perpetuating violence was a powerful spiritual action. It wasn't that there was no violent people in that 1964 Alabama march. Am I right with the date? I try to remember my history, but I'm not quite certain. The march that Martin Luther King did. There were violent people in it, but they decided to not be violent. It was a spiritual practice on that march. This is why I say, in the business of our life, we need to define the practice from the belief, rather than trying to live the whole belief. I am sure that there were people on that march that went home and may have battered their wife or husband or children. But that spiritual practice in that march that day was to be non-violent. Define your practice. UN, Unitarian Universalist, I've got to stop saying UU, right? Unitarian Universalist Minister Scott W. Alexander defines spiritual practice as intentionality, regularity, and depth. On my journey to define my spiritual practice, I found that it occasionally changed, even when I did the same activity daily. Reading a piece of scripture, which in my busy life meant a download phone app that gives me a verse each morning. Okay? But I sometimes did this with intentionality, regularly. Whatever the app sent me, I read. Another time, I studied the verse in depth. Another time, I danced the verse, or sang it, or sat with it in silence. So my belief in a Jewish God, and my need to clarify my understanding about this God, translated to defining my spiritual practice by taking time to read an app. Takes less than 30 seconds sometimes. Start off small. From the precept of abstaining from taking a life, this week I have intentionally practiced abstaining from taking a life of a spider. Start off small. I've attempted this week to treat spiders with loving kindness and do no harm. And after a week, I will try again and again and again until the practice becomes part of my being, and instead of my spirituality being on the edge of life, it will be the centre of my life. Another Unitarian Universalist, Rev. Susan Mancasile, defining spiritual practice, said, "I want to paint the earth in words and sing my blessings in the wind. I want to paint the earth in words and sing my blessings in the wind." Most days I do pray now. I had a lot of difficulty with praying in the last 2 years, so much difficulty that I did it as a research project for my course. I recorded, reflected, analysed, evaluated, and reflected on the evaluation for 30 days of my prayer life. I began with the premise that I'd stop praying because I was too busy. I thought I only prayed when I was in church, usually doing a church service. But the research found I prayed a lot. I prayed occasionally for God to intervene, even though I don't believe in an interventionist God, in my life or someone else's life. I prayed for world peace. I prayed prayers of petition, intercession, praises, thanksgiving, arrow prayers, chatty prayers, and prayers of the heart. I did prayers of movement. I danced. I did prayers of singing. I did prayers of silence. I prayed prayers of lamentation. Now, out of all the prayers I mentioned, guess which prayer was the most I did in my 30 days studied? Any ideas?
Dancing.
Oh, you give me credit. No. I wish.
Intervention.
Petition.
Lamentation. I like to complain in my prayer life. Boy, do I complain. My second most common prayer was dancing, and my third most common was singing prayers. So like Susan Lancashire, I sing my blessings in the wind. I found out in this research that I really like singing prayers. So now we come to another activity. What practices can you define for yourself? What can you incorporate into your busy schedule? Your daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, whatever. What from your belief system, what can you practice? I've given you some ideas, and I'm sure you have more. So I'm going to give you a few minutes to talk in pairs, so someone close to you, about what spiritual practices you can define from your beliefs. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Sounds like you've got a lot to talk about, a lot of practices. And I think hopefully you'll share more with each other, because it's always good to have sharing, give you good ideas. So I'm hoping you're feeling energised and ready to do engaging in your practices. So that's the first section. Engage in the practice. Give thanks for life, the sun, the moon, the stars. Thanks for the people that I see today. And God, I ask to watch and guide my way. Singing prayer. I do it first thing in the morning.
Do it again.
I've done it four times today. I'm nervous. Point of singing prayers is whatever words you want. And now you recognise the tune. It's from the Purple Hymn Book and it's called Carl, what's the name of the tune again?
Give Thanks for Life 44 and the tune is called Tsunami.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm not very good with tunes and hymns and singing. I'm quite nervous about singing. But I never remember what the tune is called. But any tune will do. Any hymn, any song. You know? Yeah. Just make it your own words. I do. I don't remember the words of half the hymns that we have. I just love hearing them, but I don't remember the words. The point is to pray what you feel in that moment. And what you feel will change by moment to moment. And who you're singing for will change from moment to moment. But it's a few seconds of engaging in your spirituality. For me, this tune right now, this last, about 7 months, has worked great for me. It makes me feel intentional. And I do it regularly. And I feel this in-depth love and connection to the person I'm singing or to the nature I'm singing. Intentionality, regularity, and in-depth feelings. I pray my fears, my hopes, my joys, my thanksgivings. And like I said, mostly I start the day this way. And a lot of times I end the day this way. And so the maker wasn't very pleased because I started the day this way. Occasionally, what's going on in the world, what I hear on the news, dictates my practices. So I have my daily practice, my daily things that I do. And then something happens. Syria. Egypt. Lots of countries, African countries as well. Something happens. We see the worst aspects of humanity. And I have to start singing a prayer. So I'm going to ask you to join with me in singing something that's spiritual, that maybe gets out your feelings of frustration at the devastation in the world, but also hope. Hope for tomorrow. And we're going to sing, we're going to have a sheet going out. And we're going to sing Rivers of Babylon. And we're going to play it on the CD, so don't be too nervous if you don't know the words. But join in as you can. You can wave your hands, you can dance, you can do anything you want. Spiritual engagement. Stand up and engage. engaging your spirituality should be wholehearted.
Yeah.
It should be joyful, even when the depths of sorrow. Dance it. Don't care who's watching. The rivers of Babylon, based on the Psalms 137, expressing the yearnings of the Jewish people in exile following the Babylonian conquest of Jerusalem in 586 BCE. You may only have a minute to spare, but be wholehearted. Set the time apart. Define your spirituality. Even as I'm walking down the corridor of Huklo, I can sing inside, taking that time in my busy schedule. Even as I'm walking to the chapel, I can sing inside. Even as I'm driving on the motorway, I can sing aloud, scared of the other drivers. Engage in my spirituality. Sharing and engaging in a spiritual practice with you in this hour, I feel more connected to each of you. It's also why attending chapel on a Sunday is so important, because it is a spiritual practice. And it's made more powerful with the sharing of each other in community. I'm all for individual spiritual practices. In the busyness of our lives, it's possible sometimes that's the only thing we can do. Yet, the words of John on Tuesday are ringing in my ears. The word convenient or inconvenient. And how true that feels when I am busy. I feel compelled to voice a concern, so we might go over by 5 minutes. Unitarianism isn't an individual religion. We may each follow an individual path of spirituality, like the young people Kate spoke about on Wednesday. We are often ignored or excluded and live on the edge. And like the challenge program, we too have a challenge ahead. And part of that is recognising in coming together, we acknowledge the need for community. We acknowledge our limitations to do things alone. We acknowledge the beauty and the peace and the hope of love we receive and give in being together. And we acknowledge the power we have to make changes. Changes that affect our churches, our localities, our world. When we unite together. Being too busy to take the time becomes the downfall to our personal spirituality and our collective community. We all live on the edge of something. It may be defining our edge is cultural or economical or social, as Rob expressed. Or it may be the edge of mainstream, as Jim was talking about, looking for a path back to the centre. Or maybe if we spent time to define our practices individually and congregationally and nationally, and took time to engage in those practices, maybe instead of wanting back into the mainstream, we could lead mainstream to the centre of spirituality. Whatever your living at the edge denotes, don't forget your spirituality. Take the time to define and engage in it. Now, going back to the letter of Nancy and Julie, I don't want to leave you there in fear for the afternoon event. So I don't want to leave it on your fingertips there, you know. Try and find time for a spiritual practice back from the edge. You're holding onto that branch by your fingertips. Visualise someone giving you a helping hand back up. Visualisation, spiritual practice. Sometimes, reach out your hand. You never know who's going to grab it. Be a spiritual practice to help others. Spiritual giving. Remember the worth of every human being. We've had a lovely week together. We've had wonderful food. And I know we're collecting to give, to say thank you. But when you're thinking about it, and when you're putting that money in that envelope, remember that if you was at a restaurant every single day this week, 3 days a week, how much tip would you leave? Value the worth of every individual. Got a few moments. That's a few moments. And I want to do this. I'd like, Maria's going to help me, because I write atrociously and I spell bad. I'd like you to throw out some spiritual practices so we can share together what each other does. Give your ideas on what you can include for yourself. So anything that you do is a spiritual practice.
Dog walking. Dog walking.
Dog walking. Very good one. Thank you.
Saying hello to the universe every morning.
Saying hello.
Hanging out the washing and enjoying it.
Looking at a flower.
Looking at a flower.
Listening.
Listening.
Saying thank you.
Saying thank you.
Recognitions of God.
Sorry, say it again.
Recognitions of God.
Recognition of God.
Singing.
Singing.
Singing. There's no way I'm
going to keep it. Anything else we want to have?
Dancing.
Gardening.
Making eye contact.
Making eye contact. Very spiritual, very powerful.
Bearing witness.
Bearing witness.
Reading poetry.
Reading poetry, yes. Yes. Washing up.
Yeah.
I find that quite meditative.
Seeing the good in the city.
Seeing the good in the city, which I find very hard. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, seeing the good in the city.
Cooking.
Cooking.
Asking everyone to come and live with me in Manchester.
I don't know if that's a spiritual practice, but it's definitely a practice.
Open invitation.
Open, yeah, I like that one. Open invitation.
Working mind.
Sorry?
Listening.
Listening. We've had listening.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't listening.
Holding someone's hand. Yes. Music. Yes.
Smiling at a stranger.
Smiling at a stranger. Yes.
Playing the purple hymn book CDs while I do the housework.
Spiritual practice, yes. Yes, thank you. So we've got lots of practices that we all do. Do it intentionally. Do it regularly. Do it with depth of feeling and meaning for yourself. So I'm going to thank you, Maria. I'm going to close with some words, and then after I've closed, Carl has very, very graciously offered out, helping me out with our closing song. That is beyond me. I've changed the words slightly. I didn't want a revolution on my hands. So what I'm suggesting is we sing it when we're going out. You don't, you know, so start singing and start making your way out. You don't have to wait to the very end. You know, so you can enjoy your coffee. And Carl will continue playing some other things as well just to help us on our way.
Forgive me. Can I just ask that folks take their papers with them as they walk out? And please put your hymn book on the table as you go, because you're going to need to tidy up quite fast.
Thank you. And please, those who'd like to stay beyond and help with the chairs, very welcome to stay.
It's a form of spiritual practice.
Yes, thank you. Yes, it is. We'll do it intentionally and quietly. So the closing devotions for our talk together. It's words by Rumi. There are 1,000 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. May you take the time to kiss the ground 1,000 times as you leave our spiritual gathering and go back into your busy lives. Let it be so. So to round up our talks, let us together join in singing Oh Happy Days as we go in to coffee.
Oh, happy.